Peggy and I are cracking up because I'm having a lot of trouble with her writing.
I know.
And every once in a while, I'll say something that doesn't make sense and backtrack.
I know.
Some things we can't even figure out.
Peggy, how are you?
Fine.
Thank you for joining us. You know, in terms of your grandmother's handwriting, I've probably read hundreds of pages of her writings and letters and diaries, and I've got to tell you that my grandmother has just become an expert. She can read her handwriting like it's typed. So I'm impressed. It's very, very difficult.
It is hard, except I can read maybe in one letter. It's two spots that I can't read something.
Well,
I'm doing quite well.
Well, I would love for you to read a letter that you feel demonstrates and communicates information about her character, her relationship with your mother, you know, anything that reveals what's going on with the Koch family during a time period.
Well, they're very newsy letters, and they're talking about a lot of people that have been sick, and two of these are written after, I think, grandmother had that operation I told you about.
Yes.
And she talks about having to be in bed, and then she talks about being able to get dressed. And these were written in 1939 and 1938, I believe.
Okay, so about 8 or 9 years right after your grandfather's death. Okay, if you could, just for recording purposes, and I know it might be difficult, but just speak as clearly as possible and just as loudly as possible. And if you do have a volume on your phone, if that helps, but I've got my volume turned up as well. So
Okay, can you hear what I said yesterday?
Yes, but I know sometimes it can be challenging just when you're reading, but that would be so great.
Sometimes I start to cough if I talk too loud.
I understand, and we can take any breaks. So I would love to hear some of the letters.
Okay. I will. Would you like to hear one after she had the surgery or when she's getting better?
Why don't we start with the earlier letters?
Okay, and I might have earlier ones than this, and this family included always letters that they had got from other people.
That's fabulous.
It was something that they did, and always in her letters were ones maybe from somebody else. And in one of them was even a letter that I had written to her when I was 13, thanking her for a birthday present. And that was kind of fun.
That's great.
So they always included other letters, and that's interesting. Now I'll try to read this without stumbling. Dearest Catherine, Mac, and Jerry, was so glad to hear from you, and I'm glad to tell you I am much better. 6 weeks in bed, hot weather is a little bit hard. I guess one don't notice it much if they are not feeling well. The doctor says I can put on my clothes in the morning, but that don't mean pull something, carrying rocks and going to the barn. That might not be quite right. He didn't have to tell. Oh, I think he must have told Aunt Sarah what she could do. He didn't have to tell her. Sarah has had her hands full doing tobacco. Charles fell out of the tobacco farm Monday on his back, skinned his arm and leg. Sarah took him to the doctor right away, no bones broken, but very sore and still in bed. I expect for several days more. I wait on myself except my meals and something. Carolyn Price and Jean have been here until Saturday morning when somebody and Mrs. S. came for them. They were so much help and lovely children. Tomorrow I'll be free to do for myself. Burke and Helen help Sarah quite a bit. It's nice to do this, and tries hard enough. I feel sorry for her. I think she means Aunt Sarah.
Well,
wait,
can we stop for a second? When she said she feels sorry for her?
Or for him?
The reason...
I
found out recently that my grandmother, when she first came to live with them, and they were married, I think, in 1938, that she had a miscarriage.
Oh, that's what it is.
That's what I'm wondering.
I'll bet it is.
She said that...
Perk and Helen doing fine. She helps Sarah quite a bit and is nice to do and tries hard enough. I feel sorry for her.
Well, I'm wondering if that's what she's referring to.
It could be. But Helen wasn't the one that had the miscarriage.
Yes, she was.
Oh, she was.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know that. Okay, Francis and Frank have been up happy as larks. I looked for Sydney this afternoon. Virginia is better, and came home after 3 weeks up home and in the hospital a week. Somebody Trimble at home still in bed, so not well. Lizzie like a little pine knot. The Johnsons are all well, so are all the kin. Allie Graves Grubbs committed suicide Friday. And found her Friday at 6 o'clock. Financial trouble. This is the hardest to read because I think it was after she was ill. She assumed Ed's debt, $20,000, has been 13 years paying it off, paid $20,000, and the house had to be sold this week, a shock to the community.
And who Jerry, who was the name of the woman?
Allie Graves Grubbs.
Allie. Graves Grubbs?
And I don't know that she's any relative or anything. She may not be a relative. And her husband's name must have been Ed, because she assumed the death. But I don't know if she had any relationship to it.
Okay.
Tomorrow is Sarah's birthday, and Friday, Tommy Jr. will be 14, Robin's boy. We'll enclose ours letter. That must be Robin's letter. Jerry, my dear, I have a small collection of old coins. Have never had the time to find their value. Some when a child, 1.5 cent piece. Don't remember when you plan to come next. Looks like. And anyway, we will look them over if I come. Catherine, do tell me of James. I lay here in bed and wonder until I get tired. Send them my letter. Evidently she didn't, because it's here. I have moved and built the something cabin until I'm ready to move in. She must be doing this in her imagination. Hopeless. My hands are weak. Hope you can read. This is getting harder towards the end. Something about rheumatism gets him to come on something. Jerry, here is luck to you and something, if you like it. Love, Mother. And this writing in this one deteriorated towards the end, but the next letter was a little bit easier to read.
Jerry, can I stop you for a minute? Can you provide some context to someone who might have read the letter? Did you visit the home place around this time period? Do you recall what kind of the family situation was, maybe economically, or just it? I know that, you know, Helen had just moved into the home place after, you know, just getting married. Can you provide some context? Did you visit
I don't believe that I was there then. I think that Mother, well, there's one letter when she says that she's sorry that we couldn't come because Mother was sick. So apparently we planned the trip to go there and weren't able to do it.
How often did you visit the Calk home place?
I don't think it was very often.
Like once every 10 years, once every 4 years?
Maybe once every 4 years.
Do you remember your first visit?
No.
Do you remember?
Sort of vaguely. I must have been small because of hanging on to the cow's tail.
Do you remember, you know, when you went there, did you have a general routine of what you did? And, you know, did you have to do work around the house, or was it pretty leisurely where you relaxed and just visited with people?
I remember Aunt Rebecca telling us some pretty wild tales. And one that she told us was about how they went up into the room that, I guess it was the barn that had a loft, and how they went up into the loft and they put on these parts of saddles on their arms and they flew over Mount Sterling to see a fair or something that was going on, and they had a wonderful time doing it. It was a great tale that Aunt Rebecca, she was able to, she had an imagination. Well, of course, we took her seriously, Carolyn and I. And we went up in that loft and tried to find the things that you put on your arms, and we were going to try and jump out and fly, but we couldn't find the things to put on our arms. And I remember that.
Were there lots of children there for you to play with, or were you on your
own?
Yes,
Carolyn and Jean, and then Mamie and Nancy would come over, and Perk came, and he was older, of course, but he played with us. And we played hide-and-seek games and things like that.
So there were lots of children.
There were children, yes. And we played, and Aunt Rebecca told us these tales. I remember that. So she must have been there, too.
So you spent the majority of your time playing?
I think so. But, you know, when you're a child and going someplace like that, you do. When I was older, I think I probably tried to help. I know I did when I was in college.
Can you talk about your visits when you were in college?
Well,
like how long you stayed and where you slept and what your routine would be like?
I think I slept in the front bedroom. And nobody wanted to sleep up the front stairs because of the ghost.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was supposed to be haunted, and nobody liked to sleep up there because of that, and Aunt Emily was supposed to be around, and Price told me that there was a, when they were trying to do some cleaning up or painting, and they took pictures off the walls and put them on chairs, they would be moved, and nobody had moved them. And he was absolutely certain that there was something going on there. And this was an adult, not a child.
Hmm.
And, you know, did they ever find anything out about that hidden room?
I don't think so. I mean, I've seen it, and but you know, I don't think they have found anything more about it.
I suppose it was such a deep, dark secret that it was never ever mentioned.
Well, there was, they found a hidden room.
Yes, it was up the back stairs, and you went through a closet and through a little thing in the back of the closet, if I remember the description properly. But I've never seen it. You have.
That's correct. You've described it perfectly. And but you don't ever remember anyone talking about it?
No. Mother didn't even know about it.
What about, so when you visited in college, no one slept in the front, up the front stairs?
No, they didn't like to go up there.
That's so funny, because when I was growing up, it was always used for storage. No one really went up there. Huh, so
yeah.
That explains why. Okay. So you
My daughter, after she was there, wrote a story, Kathy, that is, my middle daughter, about Aunt Emily and how that was her room. And she said that she had heard that people, that it was haunted, but she decided she was going to go up there and sleep up there. This was the girl in her story. And then it was a really neat story for a high school kid to write. And then she said that she thought she heard a little rustling of something once during the night. She thought, oh, it's nothing, and went back to sleep. And then in the morning when she came down the stairs, there was this locket that was in the picture around Aunt Emily's neck.
Huh.
And it was a really neat story that she wrote.
So you slept in the front bedroom, the one that is connected to the kitchen?
No, the one that's in the front of the house.
Okay, okay.
And it was cold. It wasn't heated very much in there. It was winter when I went. And I know that Aunt Sarah got up and lit the fireplace early. And I thought that was pretty nice.
Did you have your own bedroom? Did you sleep there by yourself, or did you have cousins with you?
When I was younger, Carolyn slept in there with me. And when I was in there, and I don't remember too much about that, except I know Carolyn and I slept in there because we would giggle and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was my age, and I don't know where everybody else slept.
So when you were, you slept there, and so when in college, what was the visit like? How long did you stay? What kinds of things did you do?
Well, it was kind of just a Christmas preparation, and I remember cleaning lamps, that having to be done, and things, but Aunt Sarah had, it might have been Black Sarah. She was called that because to distinguish her from Aunt Sarah.
And who was Black Sarah?
She was a woman that came and helped and cooked, I think, or it might have been a Lily. There was a Black Sarah that came once, sometimes when I was there, and there was also somebody called, I think it was Lily, and she made the lightest, most wonderful baked rolls. And she came to help at Christmas, and I was there at Christmas, and I came in, I think, just before Christmas, and then Grandmother got sick, and we were totally involved in Grandmother's sickness, and I told you about that. And
did you help take care of her?
You know, I don't know. I think because of the shock of her dying when I was visiting her, the whole thing is just kind of foggy. But I remember the hospital, and I remember, as I told you. And, oh, you said you were afraid of Uncle Sid, and I asked Peggy what her impression of him was, and you could tell her, Peggy.
A big teddy bear.
Huh.
See,
big, lovable teddy bear.
It's funny, we have such opposites.
I was a little more afraid of Aunt Sarah. Not Sarah, Virginia, was it?
Yes, Virginia.
Huh.
I think we all kind of felt that way, maybe.
She was definitely a little more standoffish. She wasn't the type
I was thinking
of...
intimidating.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting.
I thought she kind of wanted Uncle Sid all to herself.
Hmm.
That I was in imposition being there.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, but when I went there, I was the only time I really went there, I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you went there when you were two.
Well, I don't remember that.
Well,
I remember going there with Banny as a teenager, and we slept in that house. I remember it being an L. I don't know how good my memory is because that was a long time ago. And we were in the room that had Grandma. Banny told me someone died in it.
Okay, that was the one next to the kitchen.
The bed rocked 3 days, and the person Banny was with said, "Don't worry about the rocking; it'll be gone in a few days. It's for me."
And
do you know who that was?
That was her grandmother. That she was so fond of it. Actually, it was her step grandmother.
Yeah.
And she was an Ashton.
We talked a little bit about that yesterday. In terms of this time period, when she was sick, in your visit, is there anything else about, you know, was there always lots of food on the table? Did the family seem...
Oh, yes. But when we were there, well, of course, there was farm food, and they had hams that were made that were Kentucky hams, and I remember there were often hams. And at Christmas, I remember that Aunt Sarah made some kind of an oyster dressing that I'd never heard of being made at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Mother talked often about Christmases there and all the fireworks they had. And there was a relative that always brought a lot of fireworks. They didn't buy them themselves. This relative came, and he was, I think he was the one of the relatives that came. Somebody dared him to eat a whole mince pie, and he did, and he died afterwards.
Okay.
I can't remember who it was.
How funny. Did your mother describe to you, other than the fireworks, did the kids get presents, and did she ever describe to you what the Christmases were like at the Calk home place?
They must have given presents and stuff. I have a small trunk that she had as a child, and it's a trunk for doll things, I suppose. It's only about maybe 2 feet by 1 foot by 1.5 feet, and it has a dome lid on it, and it's just a darling little trunk.
Hmm.
And that was a gift that she had as a child, so they must have exchanged gifts, and that was pretty nice. But they don't talk. In one letter here, grandmother spoke about things that she had gotten for Christmas, and we were trying to read it just before you called, and there was something in there that was in an octagonal box, and we cracked up because I thought it was mints, and then it talked about it being fossils, and we hadn't figured that out yet.
How funny.
Some sort of Indian key?
Yeah, some sort of an Indian key that somebody gave her. And she was mentioning that, and she was mentioning the I think it was Bert, that she was going to get them all mixed up, and yes, she did, because she got something she described from Aunt Rebecca. I thought it came from Mother, but it didn't sound characteristic of Mother. And then when she found out, it was characteristic of Aunt Rebecca.
How funny.
Was a Christmas, I think it was 38, 39.
Well, let me ask you this. When you stayed at the Calk home place, was there something that you did traditionally every evening? Like, did everyone go to the parlor and talk, or did you play a game, or did people kind of...
I don't remember doing that. I remember grandmother sitting at that. It was like a captain's chair, but it had a big kind of a place to write, a table built into it.
Was it the little desk?
It wasn't a desk. It was like a captain's chair. You know the library chairs that they used to have that had little places to write?
Right.
Well, this was like that, except it was a big place that was on it, and grandmother used to sit and play solitaire there. I remember her playing solitaire very well.
Hmm. And did you what year did you I'm trying to remember the year that you visited when your grandmother died. That was like, was it 1943 or 44?
I was at Duke. I left in 46, and I went there in 3 years earlier. I didn't spend 4 years at Duke. I only spent 3 years. I spent 1 year at junior college.
Okay.
And so it was 3 years before, it would have been 43, between 43 and 46.
Okay. Well, do you want to read the next letter?
Okay, I will try.
So this is after she's been in the hospital?
After this next letter is after grandmother, she was recovering from that surgery she had. It was the next year. And her writing's a little bit more clear. It was two pages on both sides instead of one page on both sides. And that was showing that she had more energy. But the surgery that she had, as I remember, it was extremely serious. Okay. This was January 7th, 1939. This lovely weather makes me wonder what kind you are having out there. I hope mild for your rheumatism. I'm having been thinking of you quite a bit and wondering if you have gone somewhere for treatment. You should do so. This must be written to my mother. Take it right in the beginning. Do hope you soon get rid of it. Catherine or Jerry must let me know. We did have a wonderful Christmas. You all did help make it. I had so many things. The room was full of boxes. Something. Papers and all of us talking. Frank and Charles saying to me, you will never know who to thank, and I'll bet you get all mixed up. Sure I did. I thanked Catherine and Jerry for the old woman in the shoe that Rebecca had said. Every time I looked at it, I'd say, this don't look like Catherine. I couldn't picture her filling a large china slipper with small dolls labeled with the names of each child, their hair painted to suit them, and the old woman graying with glasses. It is so cute. Rebecca did it. She can think of more things to fix than anyone I ever knew. Never. Nevertheless, I thank you for everything. The nicest warm slippers I ever had, a perfect fit. The money, I am having a comfortable chair fixed for my room. I need one badly. Jerry looks to be much grown up. Her pictures look good to me. Her poetry and writings are wonderful. I am proud of her. No, you are. got a some kind of a box for Christmas, octagon shaped with some, it looks like love mints in it. One has the fossils from there. So it's not making sense the way I'm reading it. And an Indian lucky stone called Foskey. I don't let myself get lonesome. I stay here every afternoon until dark alone. There is so much to keep one interested. Time seems to pass so quickly. Charles and Sarah went over last Sunday afternoon and took the children to Lexington to see Frank and Francis. Frank isn't at all well, has high blood pressure and a heart attack one night in bed 2 days this week. Francis keeps well, so do the rest of us. Berkey and Helen getting things together to move to Versailles as soon as the tenants get out. Then we'll be quiet for June. Maybe not June. Whatever. Charles has started the new year with spring something. I think he has done everything but plow a little. This mild, sunshiny weather makes me feel like peeping to see if the jonquils are not coming up. I do hope they are all better at the ranch. Spike has been in so long, no wonder he is feeling the effects of that terrible moving. Helen and Perv gone to Lexington. Sarah ready to go to town. Please let me hear from you. Somehow I look eagerly every day for the mail. I think I got spoiled during the holidays and everyday letters and cards, sometimes 9, 10, and 12. I wonder, Catherine, if you have heard from Robin. I had a card with a Merry Christmas written underneath. Do you? Something. It looks with do your heart night with Jesus. That's not making sense. I'm not reading it right. Robin, it's not, she doesn't usually mention Jesus either. Robin's Tom and children, she never mentioned getting the box. Something for something, Tommy's birthday. I would go to see her, but too far to drive in a day and return. Sarah joins in love and is ready for me to say goodbye with a heart full of love. Mother Cox. She sounds like a very loving person. Maybe that's why, because of this severe surgery that she had in the 30s, maybe that's why Aunt Sarah was so protective of her. I'll bet it was.
Do you, you know, your grandmother kept a diary, and she...
Did she?
Yeah, she... It is very, very impressive, her writings, and she writes things about the importance of planting and landscaping for community development. And did she ever sit and talk? Did she, well, number one, did she pass along like her love for plants and flowers and gardening to your mother?
She really loved plants and flowers. She loved her garden, and that's why she was so upset that nobody was letting her go out in the garden. And I caught her that time pulling a weed or two. And it was very important to her, her garden, and it was a nice garden.
And did she pass this on to your mother, or was your mother a little different? Did she?
No, mother liked it. Mother liked things. She had always had things planted. She loved flowers.
I was always impressed with, you know, all the Cock women seemed to know every plant and flower and tree, the names. Was your mother like that as well?
With what she planted, she knew what it was, and the kind of lilacs that she had, and the kind of plum trees, and the apple tree, and the, we always had a garden, and I think Dad was more involved in the garden than Mother was, but she had a flower garden at the side of the house, and it had tiger lilies in it, and it had different things, and she knew what they all were.
What was going on in your mother's life in January 1939? When her mother was writing this letter, what kind of work was she doing? What was your life like? You had talked about James's family coming and living for a period, you know, for one winter. I would think.
I can't remember which winter it was. But our life was always sort of similar, all my life. And there were always people coming, and well, she'd always have people that wanted to see her. And I, in one of her letters, I remember her saying that two friends had come to see her, and a veteran had come, and she had to tell the friends to go home so she could take care of the veteran. And she did all this with veterans and with Indians and with hobos, and it was just a part of our life. And then during the Depression, a lot of the farmers were in need of a lot of help because of the drought conditions. And we always had clothes donated, and we had them in the garage, and for a while in the winter, we had them strung across a rope in the living room, and people would come and get these used clothing, get this whatever they needed, and that went on all the time. But it was only one winter, I think, that we had the clothes strung across the living room for people to come and get, but I think that was maybe the winter that was so terribly, terribly cold. We had one winter when it was 50 below zero.
Wow.
And the summer, either after or before, it was 120.
Wow. Where was your family living in January 1939?
We lived all my life in Glendive, Montana.
Okay.
In the same house.
Okay. Well, going back to the letter, I thought it was a little strange. You know, I know that Perk and Helen had lived there for a period of time, but I thought it was kind of strange that, you know, she says Helen helps out and I feel sorry for her without giving any context to why.
Well, it may be she had written a letter the time before and said why.
It would be interesting.
You don't have that letter.
It would be. Oh, you don't have that letter?
Well, I don't know if we do or not, because I haven't gotten through all of them.
It'd be interesting to see about that. I just thought it was kind of peculiar that she didn't say anything more.
Well, you said she'd had a miscarriage, and I'll bet that's what it was. And I did not. I mean, that's not the sort of thing that a teenager would remember if it wasn't really talked about. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know.
I don't think many people know about it. Well, tell me about C.M. Perkins. You haven't told me anything about him.
About who?
C.M. Perkins, Perky. Perk, your cousin.
Oh, Perk.
Yeah, tell me about him.
Well, he was, when we were visiting, and I think I was 10, he was a teenager. And he didn't have a whole lot to do with us, but once in a while he would play with us. And I think he helped around the farm. I think he was just a teenager and probably didn't want to have much to do, except once in a while he'd play with his little cousins. But I think it was beneath him to play with us much, which would be perfectly normal for a teenager to want to play with 10-year-olds.
Right.
sometimes we'd get into a little bit of mischief.
That seems to be a common theme with the kids at the Calcombe place, mischief.
I didn't hear that.
That seems to be a common theme with the children in the Calcombe place, getting into mischief.
Well, yeah, it seems to be. I think, well, you know, if you get 11 kids together that live together, they're going to get into mischief. Can you imagine grandmother cooking for 11 kids plus the family, the mother plus grandfather and whatever family was there?
And did she actually do the cooking?
Well, I think she supervised it. I think she had a black person helping her most of the time, but you would almost have to with that big a family.
So Perk was a teenager, and then did you ever have any perceptions or observations about his relationship with his grandparents? Was his grandfather strict, or were they, you know, what was his relationship like with Aunt Sarah?
I saw nothing but loving in that family. I'm sure there could be strictness, because there would have to be at times, but it was only what you do with, to deal with kids, you know. And I never saw anything that looked like too strict. And grandfather was busy a good deal at the time. I remember him as being a dignified old man. And I think dignified is the only way to put it. And as I look at the pictures I have of him, that reinforces my memories.
And do you remember Perk at later visits to the Calcombe place? Did you visit with him later in his life?
I went to visit them when when the daughters were small. I mean, they were younger than I was. I remember visiting Kirk and Helen. At that time, he reminded me in some ways, but I think it was mainly because of the same accent that Uncle Sid had. And of course, he had to be influenced a lot by Uncle Sid because they worked together so much. And that's what I remember. I just always remember being welcomed everywhere. And that's totally different from, I have a friend whose husband was in the service and stationed in Kentucky, and she said that it was the most unfriendly place she had ever lived in her entire life. And I can see how that would be, because Kentucky people are very family-oriented and, I guess you might say, class-oriented. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I think status seems to be very, social status seems to be really big in the South, just with the old culture. And, you know, I noticed it, you know, moving from living out in the Midwest for 7 years and then coming to Nashville, you know, everything is about status. And private schools, you know, everyone sends their kids to private schools here, and everyone belongs to clubs. And, you know, it's just, there are no clubs in Iowa. Everyone went to the public pools. There are no private schools, you know, where we came from. The public schools were really great. It just is a really different world.
Yes. And it's just different from where I was raised.
Well, when you visited the Calk home place, did your grandmother ever sit and talk to you and pass on words of wisdom or say, you know, this is important for you to think about later in life, or pass on spiritual or just everyday advice? Was she that type of person, or did she write letters like that to you?
I don't remember having had those kinds of conversations with her, but and the conversations I had with Aunt Sarah, I remember more.
What kind of conversations did you have with Aunt Sarah?
Well, she would tell me, she told me a lot about how, well, I hate to say this, but she thought a lot of people took advantage of grandmother because they would send their children to spend the summer on the farm.
Right, right.
And everybody didn't ask, they just assumed that everybody was welcome there and could stay as long as they wanted. And she talked to me a lot about that. And
did that make you feel unwelcome?
Once it did.
Do you think, was she dropping that, like, kind of, was she insinuating that about you?
I don't believe she was, but I had the feeling that she felt put upon when people came to see her sometimes, not always.
So she was just, she was saying, you know, a lot of distant relatives. Was it relatives or just the children, or it was everybody just constantly coming?
It was relatives, but, you know, relatives can be pretty distant in Kentucky.
Right.
And so I think she felt that grandmother was taken advantage of a lot, and she probably was.
What other kind of conversations, or, you know, I had mentioned to you, you know, I remember going with Aunt Sarah, and I called her Aunt Sue, and spending a day with her on the farm and going up in the barns and getting the eggs from the chickens I'm trying to remember the little area where they kept everything cold. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The spring house.
Yes, the spring house. Do you remember, you know, doing things like that with her?
Yes. Yes, we did things like that. Definitely.
Did you spend a lot of time just running around the farm?
Yeah, and I think, when you're there visiting and you kind of follow around to see what's going on and you watch the cows being milked and of course I couldn't milk cows because I didn't have strong enough hands, but you just go around doing the things that, I remember two mules that were there that did plowing and stuff, and I don't know why I remember the mules.
Did you ride horses?
I did some riding of horses in Montana, but I might have been on the back of a mule there. I don't remember.
You don't remember going horseback riding when you were there?
No. I think the mules were used to plow. They weren't used for horseback riding.
When you got up in the morning, were there large breakfasts prepared, or did you go in and help out, did you sleep as late as you wanted?
Aunt Sarah was always up earlier than anybody else, and she always got things started, and you didn't really have a chance to do much helping because she must have gotten up at the crack of dawn.
When I went there with Danny, I remember hauling coal, but they still had a coal stove.
Yeah.
Which, and this was in the 60s. It was like a step back in time.
They had a coal stove even in the 80s.
Okay.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Do you remember all the coal coming and going? That was always stood out in my mind, just the buckets of coal.
And there were always buckets, and you put it on the fireplace. And the fire, it got cold in there.
So Peggy, you were there how many times?
Only once, when I was in high school. I think it was after Mac died.
You were there when you were two also.
Yeah, except I don't remember too.
Well, of course not.
I remember the time I went there when I was in high school.
And what was the general time frame? What was the year?
What was what?
What was the time frame?
When did Mac die, Mom?
In October.
Which year? I think it was right after my sophomore.
You were a sophomore.
I was a sophomore in high school, so it was right after my sophomore year in high school. So
was that in
1965, maybe?
Okay.
That I went there, and it was the only time I really I went there with Banny. Banny's what I call my grandma, and Catherine Cock McCarty.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
I don't know if you knew that I called her Banny.
No, I didn't know that.
Everybody called her Banny because the reason it got started is because that's how Peggy pronounced grandma when she was learning to talk.
Okay.
And it stuck.
Okay. So your grandmother was there with you?
When I went, my grandma was with me, and we slept in the bed together, and that's when she told me about the bed shaking before her grandma died, I guess it was.
Can you tell me?
I already told.
Can you tell me how she told you about it, Peggy?
When we slept in the bed, she told me that it was her bed, that it had been given to her, that she was leaving it there, and that it was special to her because she had this experience with her grandma, that they were sleeping and that she'd sleep with her grandma, and that one time that she was sleeping with her and the bed shook, and her grandma said, "Don't be frightened. The shaking is for me. When I'm gone, it won't shake anymore." And then it didn't.
And
did she tell you about the dog being afraid?
I don't think she told me that.
And Peggy,
she just told me that it was like 3 days, and then her grandma died, and then it didn't shake anymore.
And Peggy, did she sleep in the same bed as her grandmother, or just the same room?
Not the same bed.
That's amazing. I know they had a really close relationship. I was telling your mother that I was reading her grandmother's will, and she left just about everything to Catherine. So she was very fond of her.
Mm-hmm.
Did when you were visiting, did your grandmother, do you remember stories that she told you, like walking around the house, like, oh, this happened here, or do you remember?
She talked to me a lot about being burnt when she was a child and how she was protected a lot because she fell in the fire.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
She told me that how old was she when she fell in the fire, Mom?
I think she must have been a toddler.
I got the impression she was like around two.
That's what I always thought.
That's the impression I got from her, that when she was about two, she fell in the fire and she burnt her face really bad, and she was saying how horribly scarred she was. And to me, it didn't look like anything. It didn't look any different from a bad sunburn. She seemed to be very self-conscious about having fallen in the fire, and that people brought her moonshine to help the pain. And that I got the impression that they kind of catered to her a little bit because of feeling sorry about her falling in the fire.
I had that feeling, too. I had it from some of her siblings.
Oh, you had it from, I just from what she said about it, she just relayed how people treated her, and I got the feeling that they spoiled her.
They probably
that she would talk about her aunt Vinnie or Viney or and how she had a brand from when she was a slave. That really stuck out of my mind because branding people just didn't seem very right to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't own people, but Viney had been owned, and that, of course, slavery was over when Vinney was born, but it sounded like she had a very close relationship with her.
Did she tell you any stories, any examples of, you know, being catered to, or did she ever tell you any stories about, you know, things that her step-grandmother had told her, or do you remember having, you know, any particular stories that stick out in your mind that, you know, might not be in her book or anything, just like something she shared with you when she might have been in
the
house?
I haven't read her book for a while. Did she have a story about the sunken graves in the book?
I don't know. Why don't you tell it?
Okay. She was, I remember her telling me about some cousins or some sort of relative.
Oh, that's the story I told her yesterday.
Oh, you told her that story?
Yes.
Oh.
The Rice Boys.
Is it the trick that the younger one played on the older one, saying that the person would, if they went to the grave, and say, "How are you doing, Mrs. Jones?" She'd say nothing at all, nothing at all. Or is there anything I can do for you, Mrs. Jones? And say nothing at all, nothing at all. And the little boy heard him and went and got in the sunken grave. And when they went there and asked, "Is there anything I can do for you, Mrs. Jones?" He said in a real high-pitched, squeaky voice, "Nothing at all, nothing at all." And gave them the scare of their life.
That really was a funny trick.
Well, Peggy, on your visit, I mean, was there anything, any other impressions or anything? It must have been really special for you to be there with your grandmother.
Well, I remember going from the airport. I put my foot in my mouth really bad. I was really impressed how green Kentucky was. But it was just so very green, and there was grass everywhere.
We live on the desert.
And it just seems so horribly green. And there were horses, and I just loved horses, which I thought was cool. And then there was this plant my grandma, Aunt Sarah, said was tobacco. And I'm very allergic to cigarette smoke, and I was back there, and I never really liked tobacco at all.
So you were pretty progressive for the time period.
So I said to Aunt Sarah, I think I told her a poem I started to learn. It was, tobacco is a filthy weed, 'twas the devil that sowed the seed. And then I think she said something like that, well, I guess I'm the devil then. I didn't realize that they grew tobacco.
Oh, how funny. How funny.
It was, that was called take foot in certain mouth.
Oh, how funny.
I was probably, what, about 15 then?
Yeah, well, you were pretty firm about tobacco because you were so allergic to it.
Yeah, that's great.
And then I got to see the tobacco barns, and what impressed me was the guinea fowl. They had guinea fowl all over, not just regular hens, but the ones from Africa. And I like animals.
Huh. What else did you do?
Did they have peacocks when you went there?
I think they did. But I was more impressed with the guinea fowl for some reason. And I think they let me gather eggs.
And what else did you do on your visit?
We talked about family. And we met lots and lots of relatives I never knew I had.
Were you interested in at that time in going back into the parlor and looking in the bookcases and seeing all the artifacts? Did Aunt Sue give you a tour of all that, or did you have any interest in that at all?
I was interested in that, but it was just there's so much like at Manny's house up in Montana that I never thought of artifacts as being anything anything unusual. I thought they were normal.
So it wasn't like you were going into this kind of stepping back in time, like into a kind of a museum. You didn't, but just because your grandmother's house was like that as well?
Yeah.
Oh, I keep meaning to tell you this. The piano that Mother had, I think it's still in the house.
Yes, it is.
We would like to have it given to the museum if they would want it.
You know what? They don't want it.
Okay.
That's what my grandmother told me.
Okay.
I'm surprised. It's so beautiful.
It is, and it's just, I mean, if the place is sold, I would hate it to be just junk.
No, it won't be. It won't be. I don't think the place. I don't think we're going to sell the home place.
They're going to sell it?
No, I don't think we will.
Oh, okay.
We're really wanting.
It's like the Kentucky homestead.
Yeah, we don't want to sell it. We do not. My mother doesn't, and my aunt doesn't, and I think.
We don't.
Yeah, we really.
We don't have any control.
We don't have any control, but it, you know, it'd be a shame to. Go out of the family.
I know. We really, really don't want to. So
we don't have any. Mother gave her whole part to Aunt Sarah. She deeded whatever she had to Aunt Sarah.
Right. Well, is there anything else, Peggy, about your visit, like in terms of that you picked up in terms of like the culture? You know how you go and visit a friend's house and you can kind of get a sense of the culture in terms of, you know, maybe.
Well, it was strange to me. It was a nice house, but they told me how a relative fell down the stairs, so they tore it down and rebuilt it.
Right.
They said they had these wonderful stairs.
Right.
And then they had to tore it down and rebuilt it so kids wouldn't fall down and break their arms.
Uh-huh.
And that struck out in my mind.
I think that was Thomas. And I think that might have been Mother's grandfather because I don't think he was in the Civil War, but other relatives were.
Jerry, did you ever hear stories that Uncle Pat was the one that fell down the stairs?
No, I think it was Tom.
Huh.
Thomas, because I think he wasn't. He was the one that had passes to on both sides of the Civil War. And he wasn't actually a fighter in the Civil War, but others. I think this is true.
This is Thomas, your father's father, right?
Grandfather.
I mean, your grandfather's father.
Yes, it was one of the Thomases. I don't know if it was him or if it was his father who was also Thomas.
Okay.
I think that Thomas, who was grandfather's father, was not a very good businessman, and he was always borrowing money.
Uh-huh.
And Price sent me a bunch of copies of stuff that would make you believe that.
Really? Tell me.
Price sent me copies of a lot of papers, and I have been looking for them and looking for them. Do you think I can find them? They're here someplace, and I will probably find them before you come.
Well, I want to tell you that and I'm going to stop for just a second.